This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello, and welcome again to David's Book Talk. And today we have a new author. Her name is Kimberly McCrate, and her book is Reconstructing Amelia. It's a novel. It is her first novel, and it is a stunner, let me tell you. Hello.
Hi, how are you? So great. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for being on. I'm just in awe of your talent. Truly, this book is wonderful.
Well, that's just such a great compliment. I really appreciate it.
And I say that to people, and they think, come on, like Lisa Scottolini, when I tell her books are always good, she says, come on, you really think that? You're just telling me that to make me feel good. This is really something special.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I'll tell you a funny story about a friend of mine. I told her about the book. I said, you got to go out and buy this book. And I hadn't read the book yet. But I'd heard so many good things about it, and she was looking for a good book to read. And so she got the book and was reading it, and then I was a little nervous. I think, I hope it's as good as people said it was. And then I started reading it, and I thought, oh, I don't know. And then all of a sudden, it just kicks in.
That's great.
There's a part in this book early in the story where it just kicks in. I mean, she gets to that school, you know. There's so many incredible scenes in this book.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I mean, it definitely, when I write it, I see it like a movie. So that's how I experience it as a writer, so I hope some of that comes across.
It's going to make a terrific film. I mean, I can't imagine who's going to be in it, but I mean, I picture, like, maybe Reese Witherspoon or something. Well, she's too old, though, isn't she?
But yeah, I don't know. I would just be so thrilled to see it.
You know who would be good? Yeah. Emma Watson.
Yeah, she would be great. I mean, I feel like there's so many people would be great. It would just be so fun to see.
I would love to see Emma Watson do it. She did that Perks of Being a Wallflower. Wonderful movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful. That's what the great thing about when you read a great book is you start to picture who the actor and actresses are going to be. Who's going to play these nasty girls?
Yeah, there's a lot of mean. If somebody's looking for a mean character, there's plenty of those.
Now, is there anything in this novel that you experienced? I mean, any kind of people like this that you experienced or know of people that knew people like these?
I think they're an amalgam of many things. They didn't seem very far afield from people I have known in different capacities, for sure. I mean, I think that they were inspired by people I've come across, for sure. For sure. I mean, you know, it is, you know, it's a work of fiction, so it's meant to entertain as well. But I do feel like there's shades of these people circling all the time.
This school, I mean, I never want to go to this school.
Yeah, the good news is it's not a real school.
Oh, thank God. But I mean, so, but it begs the question, are there schools like this where these things are happening?
Well, I think the reality is that things like this are happening all over the country at, you know, private schools and public schools and, you know, schools of all shapes and sizes. I mean, that's what you're seeing news accounts of bullying of all kinds. I mean, you know, I was just listening to a news account recently of one school somewhere where they have the students were setting up Facebook pages of videos of the fist fights between the students, and people were liking the different fights. They had like 1,000 likes for the different fights. So, you know, I think versions of this are playing out all over the place.
I mean, is it free? I'm all for free speech, but come on, we have to be. Have to be a little bit. I mean, it's just ridiculous to do some of the things they're doing online. I mean, everybody wants to say whatever they want to say without recrimination. But you gotta remember, you put that out there and it may never come back.
Right, and I think the problem is that I think that the world has, like, world meaning parents and, you know, schools and et cetera, like, we're playing catch up, you know, like, I think this, it's like, it's hard to know what, like, who would have thought of that somebody's going to do a Facebook page that way until they do it, and then you're like, oh my God, I didn't think to say you're not allowed to do a Facebook page that way until you see it play out, and of course, you know, so I think we're all kind of, you know, just playing a little bit of catch up, trying to figure out how to set boundaries and how to stop these things. And I think, you know, it's not easy.
How long was this book in the making? Were you thinking about writing this for years, or was it something recent? Or
no, it actually, I sat down to write it. You know, this is the first my first published manuscript, but it's not my first manuscript.
oh, really?
It's my fifth. And so I have been, I, you know, quit being a lawyer. I was a lawyer. I quit being a lawyer about a decade ago to write full time. And so this particular book, I didn't start until I started in 2010, and it sold in 2012. So it kind of, you know, which is pretty much how long it's taken me to write most of the books I've written. So a whole process was about 2 years or so.
You can tell really good writing takes a while to write. I mean, this is just good writing. I mean, it's more than good. It's great. I mean, the way it's written, the diaries, I mean, we get to see everything, and everything plays out in the end, and it's, you know, there's so much richness in here, and we get to the point where it's like we're holding the book thinking, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? When poor Kate, we just feel this total empathy for Kate.
Well, good. I'm glad, because I certainly felt extraordinary empathy for her. I mean, I have kids. They're younger. They're not teenagers. They're still younger than that now. But as a mother, I felt so much empathy for Kate. And I would be revising, and I would start crying in parts of her section. And I never knew if I was like relieved that I was getting toward the end of editing, or if I was really just so sad for her. But I feel such empathy for her. I think the juggle that she's trying to do is a juggle that like so many women try to do, and it's kind of it's so hard. Whatever your, you know, schematic, whatever the size of your family, whatever your job is, or if you stay at home, I think that everybody kind of struggles with that stuff.
And it's more than just she loses her daughter. There's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot of things that happen as a result of that. You know, her feelings, and you know, you just wonder, how would a mother get through something like this?
Well, and that's exactly right. I think, well, you know, part of the inspiration came from, you know, seeing these news accounts of families who, you know, had good kids and close, loving relationships, and who have lost their kids after bullying to suicide, and you know, just you know, feeling so heartbroken for them about, you know, these are none of these are bad people. These aren't people who were fundamentally disconnected from their kids, you know. And so, yeah, how do you survive a thing like that? I mean, that's it's just so heartbreaking.
I can only imagine. I know you've been doing book signings, and I can only imagine what people are asking about. I mean, the curiosity. I mean, there's just so much in this book that, you know, this is a great book you can read in your book group and talk about, because there's so much to talk about. I mean, what is up with her friends? I mean, are they really friends? And what is going on with these people?
Yeah, I think for sure it covers a whole like range of issues. So I do, like, I hope that it sparks conversation about a lot of different things.
Right. I hate when they compare books to other books. Like, they'll say it's a combination of so-and-so and so-and-so, just so people know what it's about, you know. And
right.
To me, I want a book to stand on its own. But it does kind of help sometimes when you hear what it's a combination of. You kind of get an idea of the feel of the book. But
sure.
Nothing prepared me for the way you wrote the book. The style of the writing, the way the characters just leap off the page. They literally... You must have worked really hard on the characters, because they're as clear as they could possibly be. I feel like I've met some of these people, you know, just because they're so real.
Well, that's so great. I mean, I definitely, they were extremely real to me, and definitely very fully formed, and I feel like I still know them. I feel like they're real people, so I'm glad that comes across.
Now, do you have any public schools near you? Did you sort of based it on at all? Or is there
the Grace Hall, the private school?
Yeah.
You know, it's really an amalgam of a lot of different places. I did go to a private school myself, but in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think part of the reason I made it a private school, to be quite honest, was that was like a setting. I went to boarding school, so it's different. But I didn't feel quite equipped, because my children are younger and I have no experience with the public school system at the high school level.
Right.
I didn't feel in the New York City public school system. I feel like it's a very specific thing, because they can be quite large, and I just didn't feel that I could accurately represent that. But I did feel like I had some facility, at least with a private school, because I'd been to one. And you know, with regard to, you know, the specifics of the school, it's kind of, I took little pieces from all the local schools, and so not a single school is represented.
So, and you graduated from the University of Penn Law School?
Yes.
Which is right in Philadelphia here, right? I'm outside. I'm in Westchester, so not too far.
Oh, yes, I love Philadelphia. So I think Philadelphia is fantastic.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think Lisa Scottolini graduated from there, too.
She did. It's funny, because I remember when I was in law school, I remember that she used to, I don't know, maybe perhaps she still does, auction off naming characters after, you know,
yeah.
you could purchasing, you know, getting a character named after you in the student auction. I remember it was such an inspiration, because even at that time, I was like, I think I want to be a writer. And I was like, she did it.
Now, were you closed off a lot when you were writing this book? I mean, did people have to leave you alone?
Well, I've always written, like, full-time. You know, so it's treated like a job. I write, you know, 9 to 5. And so that's just how I work. But I, you know, keep it during the week. I try not to work on weekends except when I was crunching for a deadline. I also, there are periods of time where I had to get up at like 4 a.m. and work 4 to 6. So, you know, I kind of keep the time protected that way.
I mean, when you read books nowadays, at least this is how my experience is, you either get into the story or you don't get into the story. I mean, this is how I feel now. Some books that other people have said, oh, this is great, I'll try to read it. And I'm like, this doesn't even do anything for me. But this book is just, it's like magic. I mean, it's so much there. It's so much alive. And so, and I mean, what is the trick to making characters so real like this? I mean, what would you say is the number one thing you have to remember to make characters so alive like you did?
I think to inhabit them. I mean, I feel like it's almost like acting.
You almost have to know the characters. I mean, you're like, how would this girlfriend of hers react? You know,
right. I think you need to sit inside each person and imagine that you are them, and really, you have to give them broader. You know, there's a million writing exercises that suggest this, but you have to give them, in your own mind, broader characteristics than will ever appear on the page. You know, for instance, you have to know all about Kate's history and you know, stuff that's not going to really be in there, so that mm-hmm. when she's reacting, I can, you know, understand that. And some of it doesn't always come across on the first draft. You know, like, I mean, some of this stuff, and it'll jump off. You're like, that scene is not working out right because I don't have fully figured out who this person is. And so let me figure out who this person is, especially with secondary characters.
And that's, I mean, you make it sound easy, but it can't be easy. It's got to be very difficult to do that.
It certainly it requires vigilance. Like, I think you have to not allow yourself to get away with anything. But it's the most fun part. I mean, like, the most fun part about writing is getting to escape into other people. And so, you know, like that kind of, you know, create, you know, making them more and more real, and then just being able to disappear inside of them when you write a scene, to me, is the most escapist fun.
You must be, if you're not on the bestseller list yet, you must be headed that way.
I am on the New York Times.
Oh, you are? What number are you right now?
Well, I was 16 the first week, then I was 19. I don't know what I am right now.
That's terrific. I mean, it's amazing. 16.
Yeah, it was that was truly a.
They really got the word out about this book too. I mean, people were comparing it to Gone Girl, which
mm-hmm.
is
unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, I love that. I think it's a fantastic book. I actually, you know, read it. It was such a great, amazing thing to read it after it. That book came out after my book sold, and I read it, and I was like. This is in the universe of what I'm doing. It was actually very great to read something. You know, I'm not, you know, comparing my writing to hers or what have you, but I think that, you know, it was so great to see somebody writing in a sphere where I felt like my book fit, mm-hmm. and that was really exciting.
You have very different writing styles. I think comparing it as far as the characters are concerned, I think that's what makes Gone Girl so exciting, the characters, and that's what makes your book exciting. I can see the comparisons that way. I mean, they're totally different plots.
Totally different.
There's nothing, not really anything about a marriage in here at all.
Oh, no, nothing. Not at all. The stories are entirely different. It was a feel of it to me that you know, it just was, it echoed some kind of feel of what I felt when I was writing.
And when you think of there's different characters in here, and none of them can remind you of another one. They have to all be different, each be distinctive, and have their own voice and have their own feelings, and you know, and that's got to be difficult to do. I mean, like you said, you have to inhabit them. You have to know everything about these characters. What motivates them? What's making them do this? And why is that one making me so angry?
Right.
I mean, I felt a great deal of anger reading this book.
Yeah, and as you should, you know, like it has got a lot of outrageous things in it, and to me, it echoes a lot of the outrageous things that actually happen in the world, and the reactions of school administrators and, you know, people around it, and why it happens.
You must have gotten a good review from like Library Journal and Publishers Weekly, and.
Yeah, the reviews have been great. I mean, I, you know, they have been a lot of fun, and I think, yeah, that just, I've been very excited about it.
So you say it's been 3 years since you really started the book?
I started it in 2010 and finished it, sold it in 2012. So
2 years.
Revisions,
so,
et cetera, yeah.
Do you expect every book is going to take that long? I think you did mention that earlier, that each book would take about 2 years.
Yeah, it's about the length of time, although,
Can you tell I'm anxious to read your next book?
I'm already... The thing is, I'm 300 pages into a first draft of the second book.
Really?
I stopped writing this book a long time ago, so I'm already kind of well into the next one, and one of the characters from Reconstructing Amelia appears in the next one, and it's well underway.
Wow, I did not expect you to say that. I'm really surprised. I don't know why, but
I think I'm just first of all, the best way to kind of I feel a bit lost, to be honest, if I'm not working on a book. that's what I've been doing now. Again, they were unpublished attempts, but I've been doing it now for so long, just moving from one book to the next, that it wouldn't have occurred to me to do anything different.
I'm curious about Reconstructing Amelia, though. What was the hardest thing about writing it?
The hardest thing about writing it was, I would say the plot. Just making sure it is very intricately plotted, and I would say one difference between this book and my previous ones is I really made an effort to knit everything back together, and so that was hard, because if you make any change in something like, a plot change, it ripples throughout the whole book.
Mm-hmm. It does, true. One little thing can throw the whole thing off. It's like, what's that game you used to play where if you put one piece in it and the whole thing fell apart, Harvey, was it, or something? I forget the name of it. One of those games where
That's exactly what it's like.
It is. I mean, and a story, and that's what makes it so remarkable. I mean, it's so easy for something to go wrong, and that everything works so well together, and it's so seamless, and it's fascinating. I mean, and the emails. What made you put those emails in there? That was a good thing.
It just really felt incomplete without that portion. I mean, it is something I like. I like this kind of orchestral approach to writing, where you have multiple narrators, multiple time frames, and also like another element, whether it's a listserv or Facebook postings or journal entries. I just think kind of like that approach to writing to me is most reflective of how situations unfold. Like, even if you're only one person experiencing it, the reality is any experience is informed by multiple things. And so, to me, that feels most natural to do that. And I think I really felt like, I think that it wouldn't be enough of Amelia just to see her like that. You had to see kind of some of those other elements as well. And I think it's so relevant to kids' lives today. So you can't really, it's very hard to write about teenagers without including that stuff.
And it's amazing how even in the text back and forth, Ben comes alive. I mean, we feel like we know Ben, even though we don't know a lot about him. We feel like we know him. I don't want to give too much away, but...
No, but that's the reality is so does Amelia. And that's exactly, and I think that's the point, the reason to include the text is you can see that, I think it's really easy to step back and be like, well, why do people think they know people over the internet? But this is why, because it's very real, and people have whole relationships with people that they never meet. I know teenagers who have whole relationships with people. Maybe they've Skyped. That would be the close, the most they've had. And I think I wanted to bring some of that into the book.
I bet you have a real close relationship with your parents.
Sometimes. I will tell you, I have a very, very close relationship with my daughters.
And how old are your daughters?
6 and 9.
Well, that's good. It's so vitally important. I mean, I wonder why more parents don't. I mean, obviously they're working, everybody's busy, and sometimes it's hard to relate to your kids. And there's any number of things that can go wrong.
Right.
And of course, kids, when they get to be teenagers, they know everything.
Well, that's exactly right. And the whole process of raising a kid is a strange process of letting go, right? I mean, that's what you're doing. You're raising them up so you can let them go. And it's very, where those lines are very blurry. I think trying to have a close relationship, again, Kate and Amelia did have a very close relationship. And they were very attached to each other. And there was, no animosity, really, in their relationship. But you can see how, even despite that, it's really complicated.
Right. Now, I'm curious of Harper Collins' first reaction when were they the first ones to pick up on the book? I mean, to option it?
The book was sold at auction, so there were a number of different publishing houses.
Oh, okay. But they must have all been pretty excited.
Yeah, it was a very exciting time. It was great.
I mean, this is one of these manuscripts you read, and I mean, when you first get it, I can't imagine who got it first to read, and just you'd say, "Oh my gosh, I can't wait till this thing's published." You know?
Yeah, they have been. HarperCollins has been amazing, so supportive and enthusiastic and encouraging. I can't say enough amazing things about them.
Is the girl pictured on the cover anything like Amelia looks like to you?
Yes, that was actually a really good. I do think it's a pretty accurate, at least the bit of the face that you can see. It was, I really wanted her to be like an earthy, an earthy looking girl. I love the cover. I think it's perfect. It's exactly what if I could have made the cover myself, that's what the cover would have looked like.
And the title too is perfect too. I mean, it's an interesting title, and it's perfect as far as what the book's about.
Yeah, and interestingly, the title was always in place. Somebody was asking me recently if it was ever. I don't ever remember a time when I had called it anything else. It just seemed like exactly as you said to me. It was the perfect fit.
Do you think you fully realize the talent you really have?
Well, that's very nice.
No, but I'm really serious about that. I'm not just, and people are at home are thinking, oh, he's just saying it because he's trying to sell the book. No, this is extraordinary. This isn't just something, this is good. This is extraordinary. I mean, I read a lot of books, and this one really great. Like I was telling you, I was reading it late one night. I couldn't stop reading it. I mean, it was up to like 3 a.m. reading this book because the story is so absorbing, and it's absorbing to the point where you don't even want it to end.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's the dream of what every writer wants to hear.
But you're reading and you're like, I so enjoy the way she writes. I don't want this thing to stop. I don't want to stop reading her the way she writes. When you fall in love with a writer's style, I remember saying that with Gone Girl. I didn't want Gone Girl to end either.
And that's how I felt when I read that book. Yeah, 100%. I know the feeling as a reader for sure.
And what a great feeling it is as a reader. And and the thing is, you're like, well, now where do I find one that's as good as this one? I mean, it's just not going to happen right away. And maybe you will eventually, but it may take a while.
Right. It is definitely magic when you connect with a book in that way. And I'm so excited to hear that anybody has connected with my book that way. It's amazing.
I wonder, do you read a lot? I mean, do you have time to read?
I do read. I don't, it is not easy with young children. I would say that my reading has ticked down. I also do read a fair amount of non-fiction. I like to read that too. It's where a lot of my ideas come from. So I do, I'm reading fiction as well. I'm reading John Green right now.
Oh, John Green. He's pretty big right now.
Yeah, he's amazing. And I feel about his book the way you're describing. Like, I want to keep getting back to it. I think it's great. So I do read. Again, not as much as I did before I had little kids.
I think one of his is about suicide.
The one I'm reading now is about cancer.
Oh, that's what it is. It's cancer.
Yes.
I knew it was something really serious.
It's not a necessarily bright topic, yeah, but it's amazing.
It's all on how it's written a lot of times, even if it's a sensitive subject. I mean,
100%, the voice, yeah.
You look at TV shows like Breaking Bad, with a very serious theme about drug abuse, and yet it's a riveting show. I mean, it's hard to turn away from it.
Exactly, and I think and that's what I hope. I definitely hope that people, you hear about what my book is about, and I think that, people get... there's a segment of people who would get leery about the topic, and that's, to me, the critical part about Amelia's voice in the book is that you get to live with her, and she's amazing. And so, like, to be able to live without that brightness, I think counterbalances like some of the darkness in the book.
There was one thing I wish was in the book, and I don't want to say it because I'm afraid I'll ruin it for somebody who hasn't read it. But there, I did have one thing that I was hoping was going to be in it and wasn't. But it didn't take away anything from the way it's written. And
well, you can tell me when we're off the air.
Yeah, but I'm dying to tell you. And I have a feeling maybe you wrote the scene and didn't put it in there for some reason. That's my feeling, but I could be wrong.
Well, you'll have to tell me when we're stable.
Now, yeah. I bet I picked your interest.
Yeah, I'm totally curious.
What were you like growing up? I mean, were you a shy child?
I would say I was a bit like Amelia, in the sense that I had kind of my one close friend. And I always had that kind of one close friend. I was certainly not, I've never part of any popular group of anything. I think I was just kind of an outside, you know, I was a hard-working student, and I think a bit on the fringe of things. I wasn't severely bullied. I wasn't picked on relentlessly or anything like that, but I definitely was kind of on the outside of things.
I remember being in high school and having rubber bands, people hitting me with rubber, pulling, using it like a slingshot. And leaving welts on my arms. And literally, that's what happened to me. And it's horrifying to me to think about it today. I mean, I can look back now and say, well, why didn't I stop it? Why didn't I say something? But you're so afraid to look bad in front of a lot of people, you know, or look like a baby or whatever, you know. That's what, when I'm reading this book and I'm thinking, oh, gosh, can't she say something to somebody, or can't somebody do something? You know, you have this helpless feeling, like, I want to help these people, you know?
Right, well, and it's always more complicated, like, when you're actually living it, because in half the time the person picking on you or whatever, maybe it's the person who just was your friend last week, or it's somebody you want to be, you actually secretly think could be your friend if you just weather this storm. Like, these relationships, which is part of what I was trying to show in the book, it's never just that simple. Like, you know, there's a crush involved, or there's, you know, an old friendship involved. Like, it's really complicated stuff.
Yeah, it is complicated, and nothing is easy. I mean, you say, well, they should have done this. But right. If you're that age and you're vulnerable and you really want friends more than anything, I mean, you want to be part of something.
Exactly, and I think it's unclear to you when you're a teenager. It's unclear when you're an adult, but certainly unclear when you're a teenager what is really going to make it better. Like, you know, is it really going to make it better to stand up? I mean, it's hard for people to stand up when they're adults to things that seem unfair. You know, it's like you're always kind of trying to figure out what's going to be the best solution.
It is. It's tough. Life can be really difficult.
It can.
I just read a book called Does Jesus Really Love Me? And it's all about this gay guy who goes all over the country and goes to these different churches to ask about what it's like being gay and the experience. It's just absolutely fascinating what he found out when he did this.
Yeah, I've heard about that book. I actually want to read it. It sounds great.
I just finished it actually this morning, and it's just one of these books you're like, and like your book, it made me angry. It was starting to really, this is real life. I mean, his book is real life, and that was really his experiences. But what a testament to your book that I felt the same way about your book.
It almost felt real. That is a great compliment.
And I mean, writing is so, to me, I mean, if I like a writer, I really like a writer. And but yes, will I expect the same thing every book? Absolutely.
I will have a standard to live up to now. Now I definitely feel the pressure. That's okay.
Is that really pressurizing for you?
No.
I mean, do you really feel that?
Well, I'm working hard not to feel that. You know, I think that there's nothing helpful about feeling pressured. But you know what? Like, the good news is this isn't my first book, really. It's my fifth. And so I do think some of that feel, like, oh, can I do it again? I don't feel. In general, crossing my fingers, my books have improved over time. I feel like I learned something with each one.
Right.
And my hope is the next one will be better. I mean, that's what I got to keep hoping.
What were your other books about? I'm curious.
They were not so different. I mean, all the, you know, similar themes. Interestingly, looking back on them now, there's often a teenage narrator or a teenage person in the book. I didn't really notice that as I was going along.
So that's a theme. That's kind of a theme.
It is, and I wouldn't have thought that until now. I've been reflecting on it in these interviews. So I definitely think that is a theme. They're all, you know, kind of dark. I would say that over time I have more fully developed the plot mystery element. I think my earlier books had less of a well-developed plot, which I think just was really a function. It wasn't a function of it was I didn't know how to do it. Like there was meant to be a more developed plot, and it just wasn't there.
Right.
I now have a sense of how to do that. In addition to trying to move the characters forward, I think I know how to do it. So, I'm excited to write the next one. It'll be fun. It's always fun kind of when the first draft is done and then you got the whole thing there and you can start to work with it.
I mean, you know, you hear writers talk about the blank page. You know, there's nothing on the page. And then, I mean, and to create something special like this, I mean, wow, what an awesome thing to be able to do, to be able to create something. And I like the way you have the chapters, Kate and Amelia, that we know who's speaking in the chapters. That really is neat the way you did that, too. So we know, you know, who this is all happening to.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, it seemed like important with everything going on that you'd at least be clear on who is who, because there's a lot of different elements.
Are you one of these writers who's just going to write the rest of your life? I mean, is that the goal?
100%. Yeah. I mean, this is who I am. I mean, will I also take on writing other different kinds of books and other kinds of things also? Sure, maybe. You know, I don't know, but.
I mean, some writers, it's funny because some writers talk about how hard it is to write, and they make it almost seem like they don't enjoy it. But it sounds like you really do enjoy it, and you are really looking forward to creating all these books and all these characters.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. Are there times when it's hard? Sure. I mean, there's days when you're tired and you're working on a deadline, but, I mean, it's a great job. Somebody's going to pay you to do this job. This is an amazing job.
Right.
I mean, I feel so lucky. And you have to remember that, again, I worked for 10 years to get here, and I gave up another career that was, you know, I'd work hard to get. So I just feel lucky.
And you don't miss that other career.
Not even for a split second.
Really? I like how decisive you are. It's wonderful.
Yeah, no, not even a little. No, I feel delighted.
But when you were writing Reconstructing Amelia, did you ever get to a point where you thought, I'll never finish this book. It'll never happen. I mean, did that ever?
I always believe you got to finish. You got to finish. I'm a big finisher. I kind of don't allow that kind of thinking. There have been books I have abandoned at page like 50.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you're just like, this is not, it's not gelling, it's not, you know, this isn't the right book. I'm not supposed to write this book right now. Maybe I should write this book later.
Mm-hmm.
But the pieces aren't coming together. So I have abandoned books early. But no, like once I think once you're at page 80, page 100, it's like, you got to finish. You already made it. Why? Yeah, no.
And that's another thing when I'm reading, I always think to myself, this is just, you know, how do authors do this? I mean, how does it come to be so wonderful a book? I mean, and everything has to make sense. Every piece of the puzzle has to be, I don't want to say perfect because nothing's perfect, but it has to make, you know, has to gel together for an interesting story and one that makes sense and one that's not too trite and one that's not too, oh, I saw that coming kind of thing.
Right. Well, a lot of it is in your own revisions. You know, like a lot of it, to me, first draft is really like kind of just, getting all the clay together in a big pile,
right.
And then you're going to sculpt it. So like that. And then, you know, I worked with, you know, one of the best editors in the suspense business. And so, you know, I think I had the insight of my agent first off, but then who was my, you know, first reader, and she was incredibly helpful, as was her editorial assistant. And I worked with an amazing editor. So I feel like I've gotten best feedback possible.
Are they really detailed about what they tell you that you should or shouldn't have, or will they sometimes say, well, you shouldn't use that word or that sentence or that doesn't sound right? Do they really go that deep?
Yeah, 100%. The small things, it's big things, absolutely. It's all things, yeah.
Because I've talked to some, I used to work with an aspiring writer, and she told me, you know, that she would get all these revisions back. You know, this has got to change. This has got to change. It's got to be frustrating for the writer, but it's also got to be a challenge. You know, how can I make this better? What can I do to make the story better? So it's a constant challenge for you.
It is, and I think that you're trying to. Sometimes, depending on the feedback, you have to figure out what is the real issue before. You know, what I mean, like sometimes the feedback. You know, depending on who the feedback's from, it's not always specific, and so you're trying to figure out what exactly, how am I going to fix that? How am I going to reach that thing that they're saying is an issue, and keep true to what I see as the important parts of the narrative.
Now, you have children, you write, you love writing. Do you have a full life now? Is it hard to have a full life when you're writing? I mean, writing is a lot of work. I don't know how many hours you write a week, but having children, there's not probably not much time for enjoyment, other enjoyments for you.
No, I mean, I feel like, compared to working a 70-hour-a-week as a lawyer and having children, I have it easy. So, you know, sure. Am I really busy right now with everything with the book, with the promotion, et cetera? Sure, but this is the good stuff, you know? I mean, this is, and it's a limited period of time when you're kind of that busy promoting a book. But, I treat it like a job with a schedule, and when you do that, it works fine.
Yeah. I can't. I'm picturing in my mind of filming this movie, and I think to myself, God, I would love to be there while they're filming it. It's just,
it would
just,
be fun.
But the thing is, they have to keep everything that's in the book. I mean, you can't not put stuff in here. There's certain things that have to be in the film that are in the book. I mean,
no,
you can't scrimp on anything. That's my feeling. I can't, you know, like. It almost, to me, would almost have to be like a two-part movie or something. You know?
They'd have to do a sequel, yes.
I don't know if you saw that miniseries, Top of the Lake, that was on recently. Oh,
no,
my God.
No, I didn't.
That was incredible. I mean, one of the best miniseries I've ever seen, at least in recent year, anyway. Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men's, and it's fantastic.
Oh, actually, I did hear of it. No, but I didn't see it.
It's atmospheric. The people are really weird. The characters are really strange. And a lot of weird things happen. It's very different than anything you'll ever see on television.
Oh, that's it. Well, I will check it out.
But I think it's 7 hours, but it's just wonderful. And you're just sitting there enjoying the characters. I mean, and that just shows you how important the characters really are. The characters have to come completely off the page and be believable. And
for sure for me everything starts.
And like I said, you very much succeeded at that. And I'm so pleased with what you've done.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been so great to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been great. I know you have other interviews, so I have to let you go. Oh, I hate to let you go because I love talking to you. You're so talented. I mean, it's something about talking with somebody who's really talented and being able to tell them that to their face is really rewarding.
Oh, well, it's amazing. I mean, it's so wonderful to be told it, so I appreciate it very much.
But, you know, nobody, you know, you don't always get a big ego in writing unless you become Stephen King. But, you know.
No, I got a long ways before that. Luckily, I got a lot of saved up rejection to keep me me in check.
But we better mention the book again, Reconstruct Amelia. It's out from HarperCollins and all your bookstores. It is an e-book, right?
It is an e-book.
Yes. Are they doing an audio of it?
There is an audio, yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Who's reading the audio?
Kristen Hav, I don't know how to pronounce it, Havm, I believe it has.
That sounds familiar. That name sounds familiar.
I think she did Dare Me. She narrated Dare Me, the Meg Abbott.
Now, can you give us any kind of hint about the next book? Is there anything, is there a school involved? Is there anything similar to Reconstructing Amelia, or is it completely different?
I can't give away any of the specifics because that might actually spook me. So.
Oh, really? You can't even give us a hint.
No, but again, it's similar in the sense that you got the one character that's appearing, and for sure it involves kind of topical themes and a similar kind of emotional drive to the narrative.
I can't wait to read it. I really can't wait to read it. And I hope everybody goes out and buys this book and read it and Reconstruct Amelia because it's so wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you for being on the show.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.